Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Three Voices by Nora Sarel, narrated by Marie Hoffman. This book is dedicated to Tosha and Ignatz, whose life story served as my inspiration. When I decided to write your life story, I had no idea where the words would lead me. I considered telling the story as it is, just the way you told it to me. However, so many questions came to mind while I was writing, questions without answers. Years ago, when I still had the opportunity to do so, I didn't ask questions or wonder. The flow of life carried us off to other places, and in those days, I didn't have that existential need to ask. This is something I regret. Although I'm not at all sure that I would have received satisfactory answers, as you too didn't always have them, and if you did, you didn't always want to share them. Because of my intense desire to immortalize your story and to share it, despite everything, I did not give up. And now, we have here before us a work of fiction that touches on the ambivalent relationship between the Jews and the Polish people. But mainly, it tells the story of us all, although it was based on the story of one family, your family. Here and there, I've taken the liberty of adding characters or events while removing others. In some instances, I've used various details and descriptions without knowing how true they are, with the aim of emphasizing the nature of the characters or of the situations. In other instances, I've left it up to the reader's imagination. When I came across clearly illogical or unacceptable situations, I consulted with psychology and literature professionals who illuminated the way for me. Mainly, I relied on the testimonies given by other Holocaust survivors, either in person or whose stories I read. I did research and I learned the facts, all in order to be able to tell your story. I have changed some of the names, the letters, and photos, but the story I tell is based on true events. A few years ago, the Israeli poet Astar Shamir wrote a poem, and although she didn't write it in order to help me to explain, I believe that every word matches exactly what I'm trying to say. Here there was a paintbrush, and we are too, painting a picture in colors that can't fade. Here there was a castle and a river flowing without water. I passed by just to see. The castle stood at the top of the hill. Inside it, many words that no one has ever said. No, there is no castle. Don't look at it. It's gone. There's no reason to run like this. There's no more sky. And indeed, we are two, you and me. All I have done this time is paint a picture of your life so that it can never be erased. I am the painter that passed by, listened, noticed, and painted what I managed to retrieve from your memories and to imagine in my mind. The castle symbolizing your past, and the river in which fresh water once flowed strongly. Through this book, I'm also trying to say those words that you never expressed. Memory plays tricks on our mind, and no one remains to prove the absolute truth. There is no longer a castle, in the poet's words, and there is no longer a river, but there are tangible memories that become interwoven with fantasy and create a life story that is a blend of truth and imagination, which is fiction. Professor Azar Nafisi wrote in her book, Reading Lolita in Tehran, "Do not, under any circumstances, belittle a work of fiction by trying to turn it into a carbon copy of real life. What we search for in fiction is not so much reality, but the epiphany of truth." This book is a combination of truth and fiction. I hope that it will serve as a candle in your memory until the end of time. Nora. First voice. I remember. I forget some things and remember others. My childhood flew off. It's gone. And I'm still here. From the poem Hide and Seek by Dalia Rabakovich, translated by Hannah Bloch and Ariel Bloch. 1. Oddly enough, I can clearly remember moments that occurred when I was just a young child, of perhaps 2 or 3 years old, even though most people are incapable of doing so. I remember them without the help of photographs, because I don't have any. I don't have even a single photo. The war took them all. The war took everything from me. Everything is everything. My childhood, my life, even my name. I tell you, I have no name, no roots. They were taken by the war. Sometimes I ask myself, who am I? Lena from Poland? Ilana from Israel? Or Helen from America? I'm a woman who has wandered the world her whole life, without roots. And you don't know how challenging it is to live without roots. It's like a person without feet, unable to get a firm grip on the ground. Yes, that's the reason I came here. I made a decision and came to Poland to look for them, for my feet, which I left here so many years ago, and I hope to find them. Do you know what the war didn't take from me? My memory. It didn't take my memory. That it left to torment me forever. My parents passed away a few years ago. Only after they died did I realize that I hadn't asked them the significance of some of the things I witnessed. And I remember them well. But to this day, I can't explain, even to myself, what I saw. Throughout their lives, I refrained from discussing Poland with them, or the horrors that we experienced and survived. I think that I was afraid to dig deeper so that I wouldn't return to the war days, and perhaps they too were afraid to scratch at the source of pain. You know, we call this the silence of the first generation. In fact, the second generation too remained silent. It is a generation that is afraid of asking. Only now one could say that there is an awakening, and the third generation is showing interest, talking and asking. But there are few left to provide the answers. Me? I can share only what I remember. Yes, I remember our apartment in Krakow, where my parents and I lived. I can describe the rooms of our apartment to you precisely, especially my room, which I can even sketch for you. It had a square rug decorating the center of the floor. When I was little, I would always trip on the edge of that carpet and fall on the pink flowers embroidered with coarse wool thread. I can show you where the dresser stood in my room, where my bed was, and I can even remember the order in which my dolls sat on the shelf. I can also tell you what the narrow hallway leading to the kitchen looked like, what color green the tiles were that adorned the tops of the walls, all around, like tulle peeking from beneath the skirt. The finest details of that kitchen are impressed upon my mind because I spent so many wonderful hours there, climbing onto the chair, then onto the table, and from the table to the marble counter by the sink, until I reached the rectangular window that was stuck somewhere between the ceiling and the counter. From there, I could peep out at the courtyard of the apartment building we lived in. There was always a bustle of children in that courtyard, from dawn to dusk, every day of the year. Even in the winter, one could hear the voices of the children, who turned the snowy square into an ice skating rink. Only when the winter wind whistled wildly and it snowed furiously, only then did the courtyard empty out. But on normal days, it was usually filled with dozens of children playing hopscotch, hide-and-go-seek, and tag. And there were always girls in blue pleated skirts and white buttoned shirts, their hair tied with fancy white ribbons, sitting on the thick, coarse wooden bench under the shade of the old oak tree. Actually, the girls there were always dressed so tidily, as if at any moment they would have to appear somewhere important. Not like the girls today, who never take care of their appearance, their hair always loose, without pins or ribbons or braids, even when they really do have to appear somewhere important. They're like children of nature. You're right, sometimes I do see more fancily dressed girls, but they are not as tidy as the girls back then in Poland. I remember often staring at the small square that was enclosed by four buildings, dozens of windows overlooking it. My mother usually stood by me, holding and supporting me so that I wouldn't fall, heaven forbid. A lot of noise drifted up from the courtyard. Laughter and tears, shrieks, screeches and screams, blended together with whispers. And above it all, the voices of mothers calling their children to come up home, this very minute. The old tree, the roots of which had lifted some of the floor tiles, changed its appearance all the time. Once it donned green, and another time brownish yellow. Once it was bare, and later it was heavy with leaves and nuts. But it always stood there, very tall, thick-trunked, watching and listening to everything that happened in the courtyard, just like me. Until one day, the world turned upside down, and the monster of war sank its sharp teeth into our pastoral world. I remember that day clearly. The permanent residents of the courtyard disappeared in an instant, and I never saw children playing there again. It was in the early afternoon, I remember. I was sitting on the windowsill watching the tree begin to shed its leaves. It still stood tall in all its glory, but a few leaves were already laying beneath it, and I thought how they would soon be blowing all around when the winds arrived. Only Clara's son, Arthur, whom everyone called Artek, climbed as quickly and nimbly as a cat up to the wide treetop. I think he wanted to pick a few acorns to play with. I watched him. The truth is, I was waiting for my mother to prepare lunch. I was hungry, and I knew that my father would soon be home to eat with us. Artek hid in the foliage and occasionally waved hello to me. He had noticed me sitting and watching him. No one except him imagined I was there, and no one never even looked in my direction. Only Artek knew. All of a sudden, we heard frightening and deafening explosions, which drove me right into my mother's arms. Together we ran to hide under the big bed in the bedroom. "What about Artek?" I whispered to my mother, as if we mustn't be overheard. "What about Artek?" she repeated my question. "He was in the tree, and he may not have had time to run away." I feared for his fate. I remember everything. I was such a young child to be learning what concern was, but that was only the beginning. Back then, I didn't realize that my childhood had ended that terrible day, and that each coming moment would only get harder. I didn't expect the many more days of fear and concern that followed. I now know that it was actually the first day of the war in Krakow, and the sixth day since war had broken out. And I still had 5 years of fear ahead of me. My parents, like all the Jews in Krakow, probably didn't believe that the war would reach their doorstep so quickly, and they didn't prepare for it. You mentioned that you were majoring in history and international relations at the University of Warsaw, correct? Then you should hear what happened here on Polish soil. Soil soaked in blood. I'll tell you everything, even though you aren't Jewish. I believe you'll be able to understand what that war did to the Jews. I think that only your professor believes that the Poles repented for the sins they committed when they abandoned their Jews, as they called us. I can actually see the hatred in you. Plenty of hatred, even now. Just yesterday, while I was wandering through the city streets, I encountered it. Hatred. I saw dolls for sale in the stores and souvenir stands. Wooden dolls of Jews. There can be no mistake. Dolls with prayer shawls and side locks and long crooked noses and pockets stuffed with money. You don't believe me? Believe me. The Jews are still perceived as Shylock by many Poles. Jews don't live here any longer, but anti-Semitism does. Krakow, this beautiful city, is trying to hide the ugliness between its red rooftops and church steeples. So, you miss your Jews? Oh, what a hypocritical statement. I too fell into that trap. I, too, believed that all people everywhere are good and merciful. But sadly, I have also encountered cruel Poles, sometimes even crueler than the Nazis. Saying that, I can't deny the fact that those who saved me were righteous among the nations, non-Jews that saved Jews, and I will never, ever forget them. I'll tell you. Don't rush me. I won't leave any of the details out. Where was I? Oh, on the day they occupied Krakow. I think that Mom and I lay under the double bed for over 2 hours before my father came home. Only then did we leave our hiding place. We went over to him. He was pale and not at all surprised to find us under the bed, and he responded as if we lay there every day to rest. His voice wasn't its usual self. He also whispered. His face suddenly looked different, worried. That day he didn't even remove the hat from his head, didn't remove his coat, and didn't eat his dinner, that in the meantime had grown cold in the kitchen. Instead, he rushed out and promised to be back soon. My mother told him to be careful, and he kissed her and me. I don't know when he returned, because I fell asleep in their bed, without washing, without putting on my pajamas. And when I woke up between them, I noticed that they also hadn't changed into their pajamas or slept at all, and had only whispered all night. From that day on, our lives were very different. My mother and I rarely went out. My father still went to work each day, but came home before dark, much earlier than usual. He seemed constantly preoccupied, and his happy smile slowly faded until it was completely erased from his face. I noticed earlier that you were reading the novel Exodus. That's why I approached you. In what language is your Exodus written? I see it's in Polish. You were moved when you read it, right? I saw you wipe your tears away. I don't know if my story will even interest you. It isn't like Exodus. There are no acts of great heroism. I've never shared it, ever. My story is terribly, terribly sad. So perhaps I should stop. I can see that you're an emotional person. No, it's impossible this way. The noise here is terrible.
It's distracting me. The lobby of the Radisson Blue Hotel isn't a good place to tell horror stories. It's starting to fill up now for dinner. It's hard to have a conversation here. Let's move to a quieter spot where we can hear each other. Look how beautiful Krakow is now from the window. A city awash in the last light of dusk. During the war, we stopped noticing its beauty. We saw only fear. Mom stayed home most of the time. She said that there was no point in going out because there were so many places she was forbidden to go. And if she went out anyway, she always wore her coat that had a white band with a picture of a blue Star of David sewn onto one of her sleeves, like on Papa's coat. Mom explained to me that all Jews were required to wear this patch to show that they were Jewish. I don't think I asked questions because I probably didn't understand yet what Jews were. At night, before I went to sleep, my mother would sing songs in Yiddish to me, as she always did. You do know what Yiddish is, right? This is how she sang to me. A Yiddishe Mame, sie macht doch süß die ganze Welt. A Yiddishe Mame, a zoi wie bitter, wenn sie fällt. In Wasser und Feuer. Wollt sie gelaufen fahr ihr Kind, dass sie gewiss die Gräste sind. To this day, I don't speak Yiddish. I understand only a little, but I do know that it's a song about a Jewish mother who does only good for everyone and walks through fire and water to save her children. That song infused me with great confidence. Whenever my mother sang it to me, I believed that she would never abandon me and that she would always protect me. Although I didn't understand a single word, my mother's body language, while she sang and stroked my head, had more of an impact on me than the lyrics. The sound of her voice was also soothing, and I would fall asleep, safe and sound. I went back to spending most of my time on the windowsill, watching without being seen. Although the courtyard was free of children and games, many people passed through, some wearing patches on their arms, while others went without. I also saw soldiers and police officers, hats on their heads, their shoes shiny, their batons hanging on a chain from their belt, and their pistols in holsters. I loved looking at everybody. Sometimes my mother was afraid I'd see things that children shouldn't see, and she would take me down from my perch. A number of times my mother went shopping and left me at home for hours on end, and our neighbor, Anya, came around with Mark, her son, who was much older than me, by 5 years, perhaps. Then we would both want to climb onto the sill, but his mother always told us we mustn't look too much without first knowing what we'd see there. I should have answered that it was more interesting when we didn't know beforehand, because if you know, what's interesting about it? But I didn't answer. After all, I was so young. Sometimes we'd go to Mark's house, and then his mother would go out shopping. After the day of the big, frightening explosions, there were no more cookies at home, and we also ran out of fruit and candy. We almost never ate meat anymore, perhaps just once a week. I don't remember vegetables, but I do remember that there were potatoes and onions. Whenever I was hungry and asked for something to eat, I was always told to wait a short while. Now I realize that Mom was buying a little more time each day, trying not to use up too much food. My mother was always a wonderful cook, but in those days, she didn't have enough ingredients to cook with. So she would fry onion on a steaming hot plate until the onion became a sweet spread, like jelly. And I would spread it on a thin slice of bread. It was delicious. I still remember how the onion tasted. Do you know that when you fry onion, it becomes sweet? There is even no need to add sugar. One cold, sunny day, when the oak tree in our courtyard was once again beginning to adorn itself with a few green leaves, our apartment suddenly filled up with strangers. I think I was 3.5 years old by then, and I remember everything. Everything. "They've come to live with us," my mother told me. "Where will they sleep?" I asked apprehensively, fearing that these people would soon be invading my life. "In both your room and the living room. And if that isn't enough space, then in the bedroom too," she whispered her answer to me. Her answer, which I could barely hear, shook me like a scream. I felt betrayed, as if things were being done behind my back. Why had nobody told me what was going to happen? How did they not share these changes with me? It was a really strange day, the kind of day that occurs every few years and that people say will remain etched in their minds forever. On the one hand, the sun was shining brightly and managing to penetrate through all the layers of smog that always covered the city skies, and on the other, it was so cold outside, it could break glass. Today I know that this all took place in March, the month that is supposedly the end of winter, the beginning of spring. And the weather was typical of that time of year. Freezing cold that felt like the middle of December, and the sun was blinding, as in August. I remember that when I looked at the sky, it seemed to be low, almost touching the ground. And when my mother opened the window to allow a little fresh air in, as she used to say, every time she pulled the shutter up from the windowsill, the apartment was immediately flooded with strong light and an icy wind. The front door was ajar, and a long procession of people carrying luggage started making their way in through the narrow doorway. They arrived at our home without explanation. They were all wearing dark coats with a patch sewn onto the sleeve, that white fabric with the picture of a Star of David. They wore hats, and their arms were laden with bundles. I stood with my back against the wall, holding a chair, and I could smell the pungent stench of sweat. I didn't know these people. Yet I realized, with a child's sensibility, that I had some connection to them. They nodded their hellos. They didn't even smile, just stole glances through cast-down eyes. There were big and small children with them, who walked straight into my bedroom, my castle, uninvited. Unrestrained in any way, they immediately started touching the things that had belonged only to me until that day. And I was still so young. Frightened, I ran to my mother, who was standing in the kitchen doorway, so she could hold me and help me return to my daily routine by the window, to climb onto the chair and then onto the table, and from there to the marble counter by the kitchen sink, until I reached the window that was closer to the ceiling than to the sink. From there, I could peek into the inner courtyard. The courtyard had been abandoned by the playing children and was overflowing with sadness, the sadness of people who walked slowly and quietly in a long, never-ending line, their eyes glued to the cobblestones, their arms laden with bundles, the heavy coats that they wore dragging along with them across the courtyard. Today I know that by pure luck, The building in which we lived was within.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?